Hello and welcome to another episode of the Student Loan Planner Podcast. I'm your host, Travis Hornsby. I got a pretty rough cold from the kids, thanks to daycare. So just know that I'm doing my best. But of course, it was this week that the IDR waiver came out, that IDR waiver FAQ came out. And I sound like a frog, but seems like that's what's happening the past several months. So I hope you'll deal with it. The IDR waiver FAQ is the biggest deal for student loans really since the PSLF waiver. It's huge. What they decided to explain and to say in the IDR waiver FAQ is a total game changer for most borrowers. It's a really important thing, and I really hope that you will stick with me in trying to figure out what it means for your situation. So first of all, what is this IDR waiver? It's also called the IDR account adjustment. So this is something that basically Department of Ed came out with last year in April 2022, and they said that we're going to adjust borrowers' accounts based off of any time in repayment and if you've been in certain kinds of deferment or forbearance. Not all deferment or forbearance counts. It's going to be deferment that is economic hardship after 2013 and anything besides in school before 2013. For forbearance, you have to be in consecutive 12 months or more forbearance or have 36 months or more aggregate forbearance. And that, with the IDR waiver FAQ, they've defined this as time in repayment. Why does that matter? They are saying that certain kinds of deferment and forbearance should be counted as time in repayment, as well as any type of repayment plan that you're on, including extended, standard, etc., should also count as time in repayment. And then add all that up together and you get your total time in repayment. That time in repayment can be carried over to a consolidation loan if you consolidate. I'll give you an example. A lot of people might have 10 loans with the same months of repayment credit with, say, 4 years of forbearance and 1 year of deferment. So let's just say you've got 4 years of payment credit, 4 years of forbearance, 1 year of deferment. So add those up together, and if all the loans in your account have the same credit, then you've got 9 years now of total credit towards PSLF, if you are working towards that, or 9 years towards the 20 or 25 year forgiveness if you're going for income-driven repayment. Now, what's super powerful about the IDR waiver is they're saying that if you consolidate, and this is finally, they put this in the daggum waiver FAQ, they finally said that if you consolidate, we'll give you at least credit for the time and repayment based on the loan with the most credit. And they're saying that they might even give you more than that if these two loans, the loan with the most credit and loans with lesser credits, you know, have a period where they don't overlap completely. So you might look at that and say, well, does everyone need to consolidate? And the answer is no. And the reason you should not necessarily consolidate, although many people should, is because a lot of people will get moderate benefits from the IDR waiver. If you, for example, have one loan that's been in repayment total 70 months, and you've got another loan that's been in repayment 66 months, you've got a four-month difference, you could consolidate and get 70 months of credit on your new consolidation loan. Sound like a no-brainer, right? The problem is think about how many people have certified their current IDR payments based off of their 2018 tax returns. Guys, that's forever ago. A lot of people have been attending physicians for multiple years and still have not had to recertify their income and won't have to recertify their income until 2024 at the earliest, and some people, probably with January or February recertification dates for their IDR plans, those folks won't have to recertify until possibly as late as 2025. So if you consolidate thinking, hey, I'm going to save myself 4 months of credit, and you lose a $200 a month payment, your payment jumps up to $4,000 a month, and that could have lasted for 12 to 18 more months, guess what? You might have cost yourself five figures by consolidating for the IDR waiver, thinking you're doing yourself a favor when you weren't. Other people that should not consolidate because of the IDR waiver are people that have PSLF repayment approaches that need to make sure they have an option to have their payments capped. For example, if you have income way higher than your debt, let's say you're a brain surgeon, right? And you are going for PSLF and your training is, you know, 8 or 9 years or something. Your payments are $300 a month, but then you're going to make $1 million a year and you're like, oh, I got to refinance my $100,000 of loans. That's actually not correct, because if you get your payment capped on the pay-as-you-earn or IBR plan, you're only paying about 1% of your balance. So if you have $100,000 of loans, your payment can get capped at $1,000 a month. And even if you pay that for 1 year, you've still got $90,000 you get forgiven tax-free, right? So if you consolidated for the IDR waiver to pick up a little bit of extra credit, then that might have just eliminated you from getting PSLF. This is, you know, a lot of edge cases, right? This is kind of the reason why we do what we do. As you know, student loans are ridiculously complicated. If they weren't complicated, I wouldn't have a podcast about them. And the IDR waiver has, I think, 20 or more questions answered. I'm sure that number will grow Actually, it looks like maybe 30. I'm looking at the website right now. Gosh. And this is very complex. So what is going on? How are they doing this? How did they get away with this? Let's be honest. The Republicans in the House recently released a proposal that they would pass in exchange for raising the debt limit. And it's pretty brutal for student loan borrowers. It would end the pause immediately. It would stop the new income-based plan. It would stop the Secretary of Education from ever doing any kind of executive order programs that they've been doing a whole lot of lately. It has no chance of passing, but it shows the attitude the Republican House caucus has towards what they want to do with student loans. Could this get blocked? Well, the PSLF waiver did not get blocked. The problem with the PSLF waiver was the communication around the plan was really bad, and the Department of Education only had maybe a 20% take-up rate. Only about 20% of the people that could have gotten the whole thing forgiven applied. I mean, is that success? I don't know. Like, the 20% of people that apply are folks listening to this podcast that disproportionately have more education, more income, better finances, right? Your 80% of people that didn't apply are disproportionately lower income, lower education levels. You did bring borrowers relief. You did bring a lot of struggling borrowers relief, but you left a lot of people out, and it was a program that benefited higher income people disproportionately because of the way they designed the program. For the IDR waiver, is it going to be similar? I'll say one thing that is good is that I think this is a program that's a little easier than the PSLF waiver, maybe, because it's one step instead of two steps, right? It either happens automatically or you have to consolidate. So it's like the PSLF waiver, you had to apply for it. And so the IDR waiver, some people will get the benefit from not doing anything, which is good. But I think the real complexity, the way the IDR waiver is more complex than the PSLF waiver, is the PSLF waiver was only like for public servants, and it was only like how long you've been in repayment, actual repayment, not forbearance deferment. The IDR waiver has very complex rules with like counting how long have you been in forbearance or deferment, and what kind of forbearance or deferment was it? And then should you consolidate, and then what is your current IDR payment, and then will you reset it? So that stuff's really complex. And we also know the Department of Education is very prone to screw things up. So, you know, you might have the math show that, you know, you're going to lose your $300 a month payment, but you'd get an extra 14 months of credit, and you run the math, and you're, even though your payment's jumping from $300 a month to $1,000 a month because your income's much higher, you decide, okay, I want to go ahead and consolidate. Well, the problem there is, you know how the Department of Education is on things. Maybe the juice isn't worth the squeeze. Maybe that's too complex, you know, not enough of a benefit to take that action. So that's what we kind of do with all of our advice with student loans, is we sort of say, is this worth it? Is this a smart use of time? Like, should you do this? That's what we're trying to accomplish for all of our clients, is does this make sense? Like, is this a good use of your time doing this? And is this a good setup for yourself overall financially? I think that the IDR waiver is an absolute masterclass in folks that would consider themselves like progressives, progressive policy people, and how to accomplish goals that Congress would never pass, right? If this was passed through Congress, this would be hundreds of billions of dollars. Maybe not that much in the way they would score it. It'd be at least, I think, 50 to 100 billion. I mean, the administration, I'm assuming there's going to be a lot of political fights about this, because when they announced the program, they literally said, quote, you know, a few thousand borrowers might see forgiveness from this. And they deleted that language, and now they say many borrowers can see their loans forgiven from this. How many is many? Millions. So it's interesting they said a few thousand, and then it's actually a few million people that could get their loans totally forgiven. What happened is in April of 2021, Senator Warren sent a letter to Department of Education asking Department of Education, wink, wink, nod, nod, to basically define time and repayment as any repayment plan, any type of deferment, any type of forbearance combined based on the loan that was the oldest loan. So for example, if somebody was, you know, somebody took out a loan in 2000, went to grad school, deferred it, paid some, did forbearance, took out loans for Parent Plus loans and deferred those, and still has those loans from undergrad, then because one of the loans is from 2000, that person is counted as being in repayment 23 years. Maybe subtract some of the in-school deferment, maybe 15 years. But that's the way they're defining this. And that's why I felt very confident that this is the IDR waiver FAQ that we got was the one that I expected. Because that like letter Senator Warren sent, and the way that Senator Warren held up the appointment of Undersecretary Kaval to the Department of Education, very much, and just the way she like got a lot of her allies into key positions in the Department of Education, and just the way that Department of Ed, a lot of the key positions is like, kind of, there's a lot of people that are in the consumer advocate, like student loan borrower protection center kind of groups. This was all genius on their front. You make it look like it's not a big deal. It's a huge deal. You know, you run circles around the anti-student debt relief conservative groups that just had no clue what was really going on here. That's one observation. It's like the progressive student loan policy experts are just way better than the conservative student loan policy experts at just accomplishing what they want to accomplish. I don't know why that is. It just, you know, this is a direct result of like the Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren wing of the party stacking policy people in Department of Education that are real experts at what they do. That's why we have an IDR waiver, I think. And part of it was they started with the PSLF waiver because that's a test case. Test case, you've got very sympathetic borrowers. You put them on 60 Minutes, like military members. Who can argue against that, right? And then you do that, and then that creates the precedent of let's do an IDR waiver, present it as, you know, fixing a program that screwed over borrowers. And it's true, borrowers did get bad information on IDR. I guess the problem with that is, you know, IBR did not exist until 2010. Like, yeah, that was ICR, but like Congress wrote the rules in such a way that nobody could qualify. Any repayment from before 2010 was like mathematically impossible. And then after 2010, yes, you could certainly make an argument that that stuff was messed up and needs to be corrected. But it's interesting, like, you know, that's a big thing to be done, right? And I'm not entirely clear as to if they think this IDR waiver has to be attached to the emergency or not. I think that the Department of Education's view is probably this doesn't have to be connected to the COVID emergency for them to do it all. You know, I'm not sure about that. The PSLF waiver was a lot more directly connected to the COVID emergency declaration. Perhaps they could continue flexibility on this IDR waiver thing for even longer than we expect. But this is a big deal. And so effectively what happened is, you know, you've got sort of those progressive policy folks at Department of Education that want to deliver a lot of cancellation to borrowers. And this was a way to do it. Define borrowers as having been in repayment for a very long period based on their oldest loan. Make it so that, you know, you have to consolidate to get some of the benefits to avoid getting lawsuits from the FFEL investor type of people. And yeah, this is just very smart. Like, this is something that is smaller than the 10,000, 20,000 cancellation Biden proposed. It affects fewer people, right? It only 4 million could get their loans totally forgiven. Probably, I would estimate somewhere between 5 and 15 million could get significant credit towards IDR forgiveness that could then be applied towards maybe a lot of people that otherwise wouldn't go for forgiveness, going for forgiveness once this new repay plan comes out. So I think that's canceling a massive amount of loans. The catch is it's hard to quantify, it's hard to wrap your head around, it's hard to understand it. And if it's hard to understand it, it's hard to get worked up about it to oppose it. So what does this mean for you? I guess first off, if you have loans that show up on studentaid.gov that were not paused during the pandemic, in other words, FFEL commercially held loans from before 2010, you need to take action right now and consolidate your loans. Studentloanplanner.com/consolidate redirects to the student aid consolidation page, which is a very poorly named URL that's impossible to type in. So if you go to studentloanplanner.com/consolidate, we made that link just to help people out get to the consolidation page. If you have commercially held FFEL loans, I will say probably in 90 or 95% of cases, you should consolidate everything. There's some exceptions, and those exceptions are very costly if that applies to you. But in general, you should do that, and you should do it quick. Why? Somebody could file a lawsuit to block the IDR waiver for commercially held FFEL loans. At the moment I recorded this, they haven't done so yet, but they could. And if they do, it's going to be like the student loan cancellation, probably, where they say anybody who consolidated before this date is eligible, anybody who consolidated after this date's not. So specifically, I want to bring up, though, that Department of Ed held FFEL and direct loans, I don't think would be subject to this. You would have to have something done by Congress or just by the courts in general to block it for those borrowers. So if you're one of those borrowers, I think you've got a lot more time. They say you've got to consolidate by the end of the year, December 2023, to get this benefit. They also say some kind of interesting things about when you could expect to have your loans forgiven. They say that if you consolidate before August 1st, and you qualify for total forgiveness under the waiver, they expect that you will not have to make any more payments when loan payments restart. If you consolidate after August 1st, then they said that you might have to make payments, which could be refunded to you if they determine you've got more credit than the required amount to have forgiveness. So there's also a refundable aspect to this, where if you have more credit than you than you need, you're going to get refunds, which is also a big deal. You might be a little confused, and I wouldn't blame you. This IDR waiver stuff is interesting because, you know, you can't bring, like, you know, the military person on 60 Minutes and say, hey, this program for public servants is broken, we need it fixed. The audience for this is perhaps, I guess, I don't want to use the word more like politically attackable, but I don't know. I mean, obviously Republicans are worked up about the IDR waiver and account adjustment. They've called it out. They've tried to block it with the Congressional Review Act resolution. They can't be successful, though, because President Biden's in the White House and would veto it, and you need two-thirds majority to overcome the veto. So the IDR waiver, I think, is pretty safe, except for the commercially held FFELP people, where the reason I think that is if you look at the Eastern District Court of Missouri in the student loan cancellation case, that judge said, sure, go ahead, President Biden, cancel student loans because there's no standing to block it. But he did say that you cannot provide an ongoing incentive to consolidate FFEL loans, and he cited that as a potential example of something that could have caused the whole thing to get blocked. And, you know, if you doesn't take a genius to say, okay, like, if you can't provide an ongoing incentive to consolidate FFEL loans, and you tell all borrowers, if you consolidate, we'll forgive almost all of your loans, that's a huge incentive to consolidate FFEL loans. So if somebody, and I'm not giving any original ideas here. I know certain investors have thought about this and for whatever reason have chosen not to sue. So let's hope it stays that way if you're counting on consolidating FFEL loans. You might say, well, how does this help me if I'm a PSLF borrower? It helps you a lot because you can get credit towards PSLF for periods where you were working at a qualifying employer. So resubmit your PSLF forms. Doesn't hurt not to. studentaid.gov/PSLF, if that could help you. And you could get a lot of extra credit towards PSLF this way. You can also, for all borrowers, submit a complaint to Department of Education if you believe your servicer steered you into forbearance, and you might be able to get additional credit applied to your account, even if you don't pass that 1236 forbearance rule. So my voice is about to give out. I promise we'll do a lot more podcast episodes about the IDR waiver FAQ. What I can tell you is we've got some big stuff happening behind the scenes that I still can't go into great detail about, but it's going to make our consultants less available in the month of May than they typically are. That's coinciding with the IDR waiver coming out, the details of it. And so from historical trends, I know when the PSLF waiver came out, the wait times for our consult service got a lot very high. Some people were waiting as much as 1 or 2 months, maybe even more, to talk to us. I don't want that to be the case for you. So if you do need a plan, go to studentloanplanner.com/book and get a time on the calendar. Even if you have to reschedule it, we don't ask for a credit card. You can reschedule 24 hours before the call or cancel with no cost. So go to studentloanplanner.com/book and schedule time to talk about the IDR waiver. I would anticipate that our average ROI for a consult that's about the IDR waiver adjustment for our typical client is probably going to get at least 20-to-1 returns from talking to us, at least 10 grand, because our consult's about $500 or $600, right? So if you take that and think about the average savings, I think we'll find a typical client, I think you're going to get like around 20-to-1 returns at least. Some people that took our advice during the PSLF waiver, we've gotten messages, hey, I got $400K forgiven, $500K forgiven, that I otherwise would not have gotten forgiven if I hadn't taken your advice. And in that case, that was like 1,000-to-1 return, I think, if I'm doing that math right. That's pretty incredible, right? Spend $500, get $500,000 forgiven. That's pretty awesome. Some people don't save anything from talking to us, but if you don't save anything from talking to us, you get peace of mind. studentaid.gov/book. I'm extremely confident we will save you a ton of money and get you a lot of peace of mind about this very chaotic IDR waiver. I will say Department of Education likes to mess stuff up. So it's at a very minimum, I think it's worth it to know what amount of credit you should have towards forgiveness. We've got tools that do that. So I'll look forward to our team talking to you if that's what you need. And if not, we'll talk to you more on next week's podcast. Thanks so much for listening. And this is the Student Loan Planner Podcast. Have a wonderful week.